when actor Steve Burns unexpectedly left the children's TV show Blue's Clues in the early 2000s, it opened up some wild speculation among fans. Was it drugs? An illicit affair? Was he gay? How could Steve just leave us like this? Do you know where Steve is? For millennials, the show was a big part of their childhood. And like the passing of Fred Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, or the death of Will Lee, who played Mr. Hooper on Sesame Street, Steve's sudden departure left us without a clue.
So when Steve Burns came back all these years later in a video explaining he just wanted to go to college, and he touched on the struggles of growing up and having jobs, family, and student debt, the public was deeply moved. At the same time, it was like a deadbeat dad coming back in for an awkward hug.
Our guest today is comedian Dan Kass, whose hilarious video parodying Steve Burns' Instagram return makes us roar with laughter. Listen as we take a look at how Blue's Clues affected Dan's generation and his hilarious parody video we think everyone should check out.
Plus, man-spreading for incels.
And where are the comedians at with the Dave Chappelle controversy? I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Hi, it's me, Fausto. How are you? It's okay, you don't have to answer, because this show's pre-recorded. But I can ask Mark. You can't see him, but you can hear him. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Fausto.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I have a clue for you.
What's the clue?
We have a guest today.
We have a guest? Where is he? Is he here?
He's here. Somewhere in the home studio.
Where?
Over here.
Where?
There.
There? Can you guys, who are listening, can you guys tell us where our guest is? Yeah, we can't hear you. It's comedian Dan Kass.
Hey.
Welcome to Blues, Feast of Fun.
Thank you for having me.
We love your, I guess it's not technically viral, but it was like a reaction to a viral video where you parodied actor Steve Burns. Return to the public eye. Although he's been in the public eye all along. He just did something for Nickelodeon, right?
Yeah, he just kind of dipped for a bit.
And you grew up in 1998, you were like 5 years old, is that right?
Yeah, I was like turning five December, so like 4 or 5.
Is that when he quit the show?
No, it was a little bit later.
Yeah.
It was I want to say it was like early 2000s.
Oh.
Because
2002
I
he quit the show.
Yeah. And I was like, it like blew up and my all my classmates lost their shit.
Like what happened? Like what was your expectation? So, like I don't remember. I don't watch
well,
it.
Well, let's rewind a second. Right. We need to establish what Blue's Clues is for our audience.
Sure.
There's people like
well, it's fully back, right? Like it's completely back now,
and it's now hosted by a Latinx non-binary.
They got three different guys, including Steve,
and a non-binary person.
Steve's
doing
back.
Yes, Steve, he's fine.
He's
pretty sure.
Back?
Pretty
what?
Sure he's back. I've seen him do other shit. Like, it's not the only video I've seen him do.
He's like, I need a check.
Like,
the money ran out.
I'm almost positive.
So Blue's Clues started in the late 90s and was aimed at not at children like Sesame Street or, you know, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but at toddlers.
Right. Yeah. It was like that. It was almost like kindergartners could watch it, too. You know, like it was like that kind of age group. And it was essentially just a very friendly, interactive show of finding clues and solving puzzles.
And the pacing's slow.
Very slow.
Like if you're,
well, you're making it for toddlers. They got
not a lot happens,
up, right?
Not
yeah,
a lot.
If you're an adult, you're going to be like screaming, change the channel! Because it's so, you know, just slow as molasses.
Yeah, and the problems are very simple. Most of the time, it's like Steve hops into a painting, right? And he's like, where's this thing? And then,
where's the ball?
And then two crayons might come along or something, and they're buddies, and they're talking to Steve, and they're like, we lost our ball. And they explain the situation. It's just right there in a tree, and the kid just has to point out where it is, and then they get it, and that's the episode.
And you as a five-year-old, were you screaming at the TV set, oh, Steve, the ball is in front of
you? I was, and then I started to notice I became too old for it when I started, like, making jokes at it, like, cracking, you know? Like,
you
like belittling
idiot.
The show, like, just completely.
Do you remember the characters?
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not, there's not many.
There was like, Mr. and Mrs. Pepper.
Mm-hmm. Then there's Blue, and there's Steve.
Blue is the dog.
Blue's the dog.
Blue's the dog.
There's Blue's a Blue.
Mailbox.
The mailbox. There was a cash register, too.
There was.
Was the mailbox sentient?
They have eyes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah.
It ate things. We never saw it eating.
And there, I'm pretty sure there were crayons.
There was a paprika, too.
Was there much paprika?
Mr. and Miss... the spices.
Like different spices.
Like the spice rack and stuff. Yeah, I actually connected once with a puppeteer from their touring show. But that's a story I can't tell on the podcast. But I'll tell you afterwards. But in terms of you as a kid, as a five-year-old, and you watch this, you know, you remember when Steve left the show and went to college. And for, like, you know, to compare it to other people... Like, for me, the biggest calamity was when I was 10 years old and the Challenger blew up and we were sent home.
Right.
You know, I imagine like 9/11, the kids were sent home from school too, right? For you, you were sent home because Steve from Blue's Clues went to college.
Yeah, all the teachers were weeping. Yeah. It was very, I mean, there was chatter. My friends and I thought, you know, we were thinking like, was it drugs? Was it, you know, we were all aware of these things too. I mean, we were like third grade.
Yeah, so. Conspiracies.
Yeah, we did. We had like older siblings that were like cracking jokes too, because they were all aware and they watched it. They just grew out of it. And then he left. And so they were like even more into the roasting of like, oh, this guy probably is like a cocaine addict or whatever. And then everybody was saying all different sorts of shit.
There was a rumor going around at the time that Steve from Blue's Clues was gay and that he was caught having sex with a man or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, probably is one.
It was known for being like a fusion of animation, right? So it was like live action with Steve, the actor, Steve Burns, wearing a striped green rugby shirt, which is very popular with like children's television. Like they did that on Sesame Street and Zoom, Electric Company.
Yeah.
Those are rugby shirts.
Yeah. But I don't know why they're so popular. Like of all the things kids can wear or adult actors can wear on television for PBS, they just seem to like love those stripes.
That was my high school uniform. We had white and green rugby shirts.
Oh, that's nice.
And so what conspiracy did you believe it was?
I thought it was drugs. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It still could be. We don't know. He said he was going off to college. But,
right.
You know,
I just kind of thought, you know, if you did that, I mean, now what I think when I was a kid, I don't really remember what I was thinking, but I eventually got to the point where I was like, if you do that type of show for that long, you're probably going to have a little bit of like a, you know, damage to your mental, like not in the sense of your smarts, but just like your overall mood. It's got to affect your, like, you know, sadness level. I mean, you go from this like high, fantastical world to not being in anymore. I feel like that's got to fuck with you a little bit.
Well, and you know, there's a purity level too. So it's like, you know, for people who do children's television, even Julie Andrews talked about this, her association with Mary Poppins and The Sound of Music made her make a film like SOB where she flashes her tits, you know, with her husband, Blake Edwards at the time.
He was the producer or director, right?
Yeah. And she did that just because she was like sick of this goody two shoes image that was haunting her.
Sure.
And she had a nice rack.
It's very nice. You know? Oh, no. Yeah. I think she does that in Victor Victoria, but from the behind. We don't get to see her tits in Victor Victoria. But in SOB, we see Julie Andrews' tits.
I saw it in the drive-in movie theater.
And did you masturbate to her?
You were like, you just crashed your car.
I was just like, oh, Maria, the sweet, sweet. Maria.
How do you solve that problem, baby?
But, you know, it was a big, people were like, oh, my God, she's just showing her boobs. Like, you know, Maria Von Trapp, Mary Poppins. People were incredulous.
And, you know, Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, when he passed away, it was around the time of September 11th, in the months afterwards. And he made one last video talking about, you know, I may not be around in the future. And, you know, I'm so glad that you are part of our show, our neighborhood. And, you know, Mark and I, we're getting 3,000 shows. This is the 10th show before our 3,000th show. So no pressure.
299.
It's 2990.
Yes.
Yeah.
2,990.
And 2990. And, you know, as we get older and we feel our age, there's a lot of young people who grew up listening to this podcast and they come up to us and they're like, believe it or not, I'm super well adjusted. I have a great life thanks to you guys.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm married. I'm in love. I have money. I have that's a beautiful awesome. House. And we're like, what did we do wrong? We still live in a FEMA trailer. But, you know, and so to me, it's like I understand like both sides of that relationship, both the loss of seeing somebody that you grew up with, who you dearly loved,
yeah.
not be there anymore,
right.
but also being that person for others and being like, I have a life and I have to take care of myself and I have to move on.
Oh, you know? Yeah. No, I totally respect the decision.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like anything where I'm like, you know, hurt by him. And I'm glad he's back and killing it. You know, I'm sure he has hella money. I'm sure he's fine.
What did you think when you first saw the video? Were you just like, oh, it's good to hear from him. Like, that bastard's back.
I was just like, all right. what is
did
this
you cry?
I was like now I was like right now really of all times it's like I was like I but I also was like this is a good person to you know be talking to us after we just dealt with such a shitty situation as a country and I was like yeah. that's
are you talking about the COVID pandemic or
oh yeah
the
totally
Trump administration
all of it all of it, everything yeah. I mean everything you could think of to it's the to the fires in California it's like yeah. it's this is good to,
it's been a rough 4.5 years
it's been crazy
yeah
It's well, I was saying before we started taping the show, you know, we used to live in the age of the internet and now it's the age of sadness.
Right.
And so as a comedian, it's twice as hard to make people laugh. And you know, we'll get to talk about Dave Chappelle and, you know, the turf and all that controversy that's still going on. you know, in terms of Steve Burns making a comeback, it did feel like a deadbeat dad coming back asking for money.
It did a little bit. Yeah. It did.
And yeah.
He also just kind of like, I was also kind of like, how dare you assume that I'm doing well right now? Like, how dare you? Be like, look at you. Look at all you've accomplished. You don't know.
Well, and you know, we don't really know in our brain, like we don't really, it's just some white guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so right. you went out to a thrift store and right. got yourself a green striped
which
shirt.
Was a bitch to film in front of a green screen. I don't know how they do it. I'm still. It
you
was
have to do
so,
a blue screen or
yeah, it's a blue yeah, screen. You yeah, can't do yeah, a green screen.
Was,
on.
I did it. I did it. It was you did. Hard. Oh man. And yeah, I just went to a thrift store, got that striped shirt, got a hat that looked like it, covered the logo, the glasses on, shaved my mustache, and made that. And I really tried to just go for what I felt the subtext actually was. Mm-hmm. So when he was like mentioning jobs, like it's like now you're dealing with adult issues like jobs and like, you know, paying for families or like whatever. And it was like, no, dude, you're not talking about that. You're talking about all the crazy shit
student
that we're
loans.
Dealing with. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Student loans. The $40,000 you're in debt right now. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the support. Like it's nuts. So,
yeah, I mean, Biden could with a stroke of a wand, a pen.
I know.
Get rid of student loans tomorrow, ensure a second term as president, but he doesn't want to do it.
No.
For whatever reason.
Got to get rid of a mansion, you know. Just got to get rid of
it. Yeah.
Some and I.
And so what was the reaction to your video from your, I mean, all the comments are like, oh my God, this is
I
legendary.
Mean, I feel like you nailed it.
Yeah.
I was thanks. Just like, you know, and it was much more entertaining than the original. Video.
Thanks. Thanks. I think well, it was well received. And I'm really appreciative of it. I honestly was really worried about it because it felt like embodying him felt vulnerable because it was like kind of a vulnerable thing he was doing.
He was somebody you admired as a kid.
Yeah, of course. And the fact that he was just coming back and being like, hey, I still love you.
No, you don't.
Yeah, exactly. So
did he ask you for any money or anything?
You know, Steve Burns was in real life once People Magazine's most eligible bachelor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they have like a photo of him like, you know, kind of sexy on that sofa
find the
from
clue.
The show.
And was the sofa sentient?
No, it was a no. sofa on the show.
That would have been fucked okay. up.
That's yeah. like Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah. But, well, it's like Cherry, right?
And I guess on the Moth podcast, he talked about going on a date with a Playboy bunny or a Playboy model and crashing a kid's birthday party and having the Steve shirt and a bunch of Blue's Clues toys in his trunk of his car.
This man walks around like Superman. He's ready to go.
He's like, this is a job for Steve from Blue's Clues. And what's his superpower? It's being very slow.
Yeah.
Hey, kids, can you tell me where the cake is? Is it here? Is it there?
Is that really what the show is like?
Yeah, he's like he's fully aware of what's going on and acting like he isn't. And it's kind of frustrating, to be honest with you. It's like Dora.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so was it a Dora ripoff?
Dora's a sequel.
Oh, very, very similar.
Dora's a ripoff of Blue's Clues.
Are you
Blue's
sure?
Clues is the, there was Bananas in Pajamas. Pajamas.
You're right.
The only reason I know any about this because my niece would scream watching this, you know, and I'd be like, Barney is for babies. Oh, that ended that love affair. She was like, I don't like Barney anymore. So like when she was like 7 years old, she and her friends were being really rowdy on the swimming pool and I was babysitting them and I went, I love you. You love me. And they're like, shut up. Stop it. Stop it. They're screaming.
Barney was annoying.
The kids hated Barney.
Yeah. People did have,
they turned on him.
They did.
Think Barney will come back?
Well, the guy who did Barney was gay. The guy who did his voice, yeah. Oh.
I hope Barney comes back and is like, hey, or whatever.
He did a video.
It's been a while.
But it wasn't like, he didn't get on
you
all the
do
media.
That.
Yeah.
Just do it yourself.
I was extinct.
Big comic came, wiped me out.
So
recloned by, you know.
Yeah, scientist.
So I feel like calling you Steve, but it's Dan. Steve.
Call him whatever.
Do you still like me? do you feel like people now sort of like have attached you to the sort of the mythos of Steve Burns from Blue's Clues?
I think that it's a milestone a little bit for just my own growth, you know, as like someone that has been making these videos for a while and they haven't really received this kind of level of response of like people being like, yes, that's it, spot on. And so I think that that's something that I've felt, but my stand-up is so unique and different that it's like, it's night and day because my stand-up is a character in itself. So it's kind of hard to distinguish the two. They sound nothing like each other.
So your stand-up persona is not you?
It's me. It's me to an exaggerated extent, okay. Which I hope most comedians strive to do.
What parts do you exaggerate?
The confused confidence that I have. The undeserved certainty.
That's always a good setup for some comedy, right? Yeah.
Well, Dan, what did you say about your penis in a stand-up routine to the women?
What I say?
Or to the men?
Which one? Which one?
You were like, something about like, your penis is real. You may not be sexy, but your penis is big and that's all that matters or something.
Oh, I don't remember.
All the gay guys that are like, let me turn this part up. Hold on a second.
I say that. I said
that. Did we get your attention?
Down their needle and now they're like,
Where did you hear this?
That was on your Instagram.
It was my Instagram?
Yeah.
I talk about being good in bed.
Yeah. So
no,
you were literally saying like, oh, you don't have to be. And I was like, but I got a big dick if that's what counts. And everyone's like, yeah, speak the truth.
Maybe we say big dick energy.
Maybe. Maybe. I don't think. No, probably not, actually. I think no. I was just talking about my dick.
Okay.
I think I might have been. I think. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why that brought.
Well, you're alone in a house with two.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
So I wasn't lying. Thank God.
All right.
But I wouldn't.
Well, that's not an over-exaggerated part of your.
Maybe.
I exaggerate something.
I remember saying this. Sometimes it's just like it's some of the shit that you say on stage. It's just like, I don't even remember saying that or what the context was. It's crazy. And it's like, I believe you, that probably happened. But.
Well, you know, it's like with Harry Styles now, I guess, is Harry Styles gay or not gay in real life? Do we know? Has he come out or anything like that?
No, he's straight.
He identifies as heterosexual.
Yes.
There may be rumors and stuff, but we all have rumors, right?
Sure.
Some I started myself.
And I've been hit on by women at the gym. I don't understand why that happens now, but it has happened. And I'm always like, what? Like, I totally don't understand. But anyways, Harry Styles was on the cover of Vogue.
With a dress on, yes.
Wearing a dress, you know, and because Lollapalooza happened this summer here in Chicago.
It did.
And we just saw lots of straight young guys, at least we thought they were straight, wearing glitter, makeup, heels.
Just because they don't want to have sex with you doesn't mean they're straight. They could be gay, and they're just like,
well, they're with their girlfriends. Yes, they're making out. You know, okay. they're heterosexual couples, at least on the surface, and they're very gender nonconforming. And my sister and I, we were all like commenting. We're like, wow, this generation of young kids is all right. You know, they're all like, gender's just an illusion, man.
Dress is a fashion statement. Yeah. So Harry Styles was on the cover of Vogue,
and so. You know, vote. What is it? Not show. What's
Billy Porter?
Billy Porter was like, that should have been me. I invented non-binary.
He's like, I invented that, like Jackie Beat.
Right. And so people are kind of pissed off at Billy Porter because he's like, why are you making this about you?
Well, you know, he's saying that he was the one who walked on the red carpet in dresses and stuff. But I mean, you know, Billy Porter is not the first guy in a dress we've seen on a red carpet. I mean, the guys from, South Park did it years ago.
Yeah, they did. They did it on LSD. So
on LSD.
They were acid. Yeah. I thought that was hot.
It was hilarious.
Any guy who wears Jennifer Lopez's butt-revealing dress,
yeah,
I'm like, boner right there, you know?
Yeah, I heard some of the Billy Porter interview, and I just or what he said to the reporter, and it was just about like how Harry is a straight white male and the fact that Vogue chose that over him because he's claiming that he started it, and so he felt like that was his rightful place in a way, which is like kind of hard to deny a little bit, but also at the same time I'm like, you know, Harry's allowing some straight white dudes to get a little emotional, which we really need right now. So it's kind of like, it's, you know, pretty good thing. It's not.
Well, are you going to be putting on a little makeup, a little dress for a little publicity?
I mean, if I ever get to that point, absolutely. I don't see why that would be out of the question.
What kind of dress would you wear?
Oh, I'd wear like a really sexy, like black, skinny mini.
You know, you're very tall and lean. I could see you in like, you know, like a Breakfast of Tiffany's kind of.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
That kind of, you know, with the whole. Do you smoke?
No, I don't smoke cigarettes. No,
he vapes.
Little tiara and a black
dress. Breakfast at Tiffany in 2020 is vaping.
The thing with Billy Porter, you know, you got to give him credit because he did, you know, shock the runway.
Right.
I think we have these trends where these things happen and they don't happen for a while, and so he did kind of bring it back. But you know, Harry Styles is just like he's a mega star,
totally
to Billy Porter. You know,
yeah.
Internationally, I mean, if you went over to some place in Europe, would they even know who Billy Porter is?
And, you know, this is what isn't this gay liberation? Isn't this what we're working for is to get straight dudes to suck our dicks
in dresses
or vice versa? Yeah. With heels and nails and, you know, dick and pantyhose. Hello. You know, that's right. All that matters.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a negative step. I could see the argument of like, yeah, just give Billy Porter a, you know, 1-2, right? Just like, whatever.
Well, in terms of like, you know, I don't know what gender or sexual identity you have, but, you know.
Oh, I don't. That's always an interesting question because.
You don't have to tell us.
No, it's fine. I mean, I'm straight, but I'm, you know, also been told that I'm gay my entire life.
You are, have been.
Yes, I have.
Why? So,
I don't know.
Who told you were gay?
Everybody.
Like your girlfriend? She's like, I don't feel it. Is it in yet?
No. It was just mostly, I mean, kids growing up. I mean, it was just mostly like that was like, you know, just always among other.
And you grew up in theater.
Yeah.
So it's probably that
sure.
The first
it's like my football friends were like, you're gay because you do theater.
Oh, because you were in sports and
I wasn't
theater.
In sports. No,
no,
no. I was forced to do sports. Yeah. I love my dad, but he really wanted me to play basketball and he would not understand that I sucked so hard. And I don't blame him because like it was hard to tell at first, but I was so bad. But I made a lot of friends, then finally found theater. And they were like, really, it was really controversial, you know, like among that small community to be doing any kind of art form.
And you so your dad's like, I want you to play basketball. And you're like, what happens to a raisin in the sun?
Yeah, it was basically, I mean, it was basically High School Musical. Like,
oh, really?
It was literally that, like, to an extent. Except my dad and I have a really great relationship. You know.
Well, you know what happened to Zac Efron? Don't let it happen to you. His face all.
Oh, really?
They think he had oral surgery or something.
Maybe.
That's why. They did something interior. Yeah. But no, he's jacked. He looks great.
Yeah. It's like, well, that, the rumors is that he's secretly gay and he had a affair with that guy who did the show Down to Earth.
I'm sorry, he was just going to college.
You're the one who started that rumor.
Maybe starting it, I'm ending it. But, you know, I mean, like, do you feel, who was like your role models as a child actor in California?
I mean, there were a lot of, I mean, Jim Carrey, as far as when it came to comedy.
So as a little kid, like, how old were you when you first started acting?
When I first started, I was 14.
14 years old.
Yeah.
And you're like, you didn't have any like teen role models. You were had adult role models, right? You
yeah. And I really actually like rap artists more than anything.
Do you want to be like Ice-T on Law and Order?
Yeah, for sure. That's amazing. I would love that.
I love him on Law and Order.
Yeah, he's done a great show.
There's a new Law and Order series. Law and Order.
Organized Crime.
Organized Crime with Christopher Maloney now being all tough.
Mm-hmm.
He's back to it. It's kind of a fusion of his like homicidal villain from Oz, mm-hmm. where he's basically having sex with guys and then breaking their necks after he comes in their throats. You try it sometime. Don't try it sometime. And then he's like, you know, his character from Law and Order. So it's like all of Christopher Maloney's characters morphed into one thing.
Because he's undercover now.
You know, so he can be anything.
Infiltrating the Albanian mob.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's like, you know, and Christopher Maloney still got heat. But he's
60 years old.
He's Papa now, yeah. You know, so he's a sexy and he's not a daddy. He's a grandpa, you know.
Right, right.
But he's a grandpa I'd like to fuck, you know, a gilf.
Yeah. The old gilfs.
And he's still got it. Yeah. And he looks great, you know, and he's tough and, you know, people get their tongues cut out. People get their.
That's crazy.
You know, and the first episode we saw, like I just saw it and it was like it was intense, you know.
I bet. There's a lot of intense TV nowadays.
So as a child actor, did you take on like any kind of television roles or was that like, did you go to
auditions? Oh, no, I was strictly stage play. I was just theater all over. I mean, I was.
What roles did you play?
I've done a lot. I mean, I've done a lot of, I did like, I mean, there's like child roles of like Nathan Detroit and Guys and Dolls. And then there's like college career roles like Lee from True West.
Mm-hmm. Annie, the musical.
Nothing like that. I also helped collaborate on a musical that was shown in Spokane, Washington at a festival based off of an Anton Chekhov short story. So it's just like little projects like that. It was like basically doing kiddie high school theater, loving it, uh-huh. and then just not stopping and finding it. I mean, I studied in Russia. I mean, I love acting. It's amazing.
Wow. So you
studied acting in Russia?
I studied at the Moscow Art Theater.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What was that like?
It was intense. It was,
and you don't speak any Russian. So no, it's really hard.
I know
hard.
How to like order a coffee, say hi. You really don't need to over there, especially. I mean, you do when you go to like more rural areas, but as far as Moscow goes, like not at all.
Everybody speaks English?
For the most part. I mean, especially.
Was the class in English?
We had a translator. And our main acting teacher, Ilya, he... was very fluid in the language.
Is their acting much different than the acting you studied here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was the same theories and the same, I guess it was the same philosophy, but it was to a hyper-focused level, and it was explained in a way that we never experienced, and it was basically just going to the core of the foundations of what we're taught in the majority of cinematography, acting, onstage acting. I mean, all that is derivative from Stanislavski. It's all based from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really wonderful and eye-opening. And we learned completely new things. I mean, we learned new formulas that we would never think of here in America. And the risks they take in Russia are far more consequential.
Like what is a risk for an actor? I mean, besides, you know, Spider-Man turn off the light, you know, where they actually plummet to their broken bones.
That's
funny, physical risk. Like, but in terms of risk of an actor, like, are you talking about emotional? Or are you talking about failure?
It's not always the actor. Sometimes it's the director.
Or the director failing. Like what does failure look like as an actor?
Well, it wasn't about failure. It was about criminality.
Criminality?
Yeah. So you show any dicks on stage in Russia, it's illegal.
They're walking the line.
So they're showing dicks left and right?
They're showing some dicks, and then those directors are going on house arrest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, at least one of them was. Wow, I saw the play.
I thought we were being edgy.
Oh, did?
Yeah, I did.
Was it worth going to jail for?
I mean,
you're straight. What do you know?
Absolutely. It wasn't like my dick, but it was good.
Well, you got arrested for going to.
No, I didn't get it. The audience members are fine. The director is one who gets put on house arrest. And Stanislavski himself was put on house arrest because in Russia, the theater tend to fight with the government.
They like to arrest artists and send them out into camps in Russia.
Right.
Historically, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know that there's absolutely been talk about that for sure.
And now I think you can't do anything that promotes any kind of LGBT stuff in Russia, or you can go to jail.
It's pretty, it's pretty sparse. I mean, what was it, Pussy Riot?
Yeah.
They were almost.
One of Madonna's favorite, inspirations is Pussy Riot. Yeah, and James Baldwin, who said that the job of an artist is to make people nervous and uncomfortable.
The job is to provoke at least thought. And it's funny because, here in America, we don't have those problems. We don't have to worry about the government being concerned about what we said, other than what we rate the movie or what you can't say on TV during the prime time.
We have to be more worried about what people on Tumblr and Facebook say.
We're just doing it to ourselves.
To each other. I mean, you've heard the controversy of Dave Chappelle's The Closer special where, I thought most of it was really hilarious and delightful, except when he starts talking about transgender women's bodies or their vaginas and comparing it to an Impossible Burger. Which is it's funny, but it's also really harmful and insulting. And, trans people are not wanting to ask you to have sex with them or accept whatever is going on with their physical bodies.
Sure.
They just want to be left alone and be at peace and be respected. Right?
Sure.
And so, Madonna, in promoting her documentary about Madame X, she was marching through it with a tuba. Song's oriented. Boom, boom, boom.
Well,
boom.
She's not playing the tuba.
Somebody's playing the tuba behind her. And Madonna, her health is not good. So these are the, she's struggling, and so she's waddling down the street.
She's had some surgery. She also wears impossibly high heels.
The tuba's just going every time she walks, and if it stops, it's not good.
And I'm like, it's collapsed. So hilarious, and she's trying to sing Like a Prayer.
Yeah, sure.
And, she has her backup vocalist, and they're like, life is a mystery. And and she's walking, and there's boom, 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 boom. And then so everyone's with her and stuff like that. And she's I find that Dave Chappelle is like James Baldwin, just saying things that makes people uncomfortable. Everyone's like, boo. Oh, man.
Did she listen to it? Did she watch it?
She probably watched it. She's like,
maybe not.
But, that happened weeks ago. We just did a podcast about it with, plenty of non-binary trans actors who are it's a much ado about nothing. It's more complicated than it is whether you're for or against it. But even this morning on NPR, they're bringing up a panel of comedians chastising unanimously Dave Chappelle and Netflix for airing this.
Sure.
You're a comedian here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. What's the vibe on the street with your friends about the special? What's their reaction to it?
Most are remaining pretty quiet.
They're whatever you want, baby. I don't want to get involved.
Right. You'll find that most comics are pretty quiet about it. As far as going on Facebook and doing rants, as far as what we talk about in public, I watched it with my friend.
But privately with your friends.
Right. And in private, I've watched it with my buddy. And, I talked to Matt as well about it.
Matt Brown.
Yeah. And I think the vibe is just. It's to me, I disagree. I don't think it's his best special as far as the joke writing goes. I didn't laugh out loud entirely. I thought the punchline Space Jews was not earned in the slightest and was just thrown. And I was like, that's fine. It's Dave Chappelle. Still enjoyed it. I'm not knocking him whatsoever. It just was not my particularly favorite one as far as the content goes. And the structure of it. As far as that, the comments he made, yes, I believe that they were transphobic, and I believe that they represent some harm and can produce some harm. And I think in some cases he missed the mark. I think in other cases it's extremely complicated, and I think people are probably pushing too hard, as usual, to be honest with you.
Well, Dave Chappelle said he's now willing to meet with the Netflix employees who threaten to boycott or walk out or hold a strike.
And that's exactly the kind of person I would expect him to be. And that's exactly why I don't think that these sort of comments are to the level of extremity people take them to. But I also am not involved in that.
The thing is, like, you know, from the trans perspective, you know, is they're just sick of hearing these same old jokes.
And I
over
do not
again.
Blame them.
And you're just like, you're just recycling, you're fine tuning, you're making them different, but it's all boils down to the same formula. You're, you know, you're questioning who we are as people and you're making fun of our bodies. And it's
well,
not
Chris Rock says that like musicians will hate their careers because they're asked to play the same song over and over again. And comedians hate their careers because they can't,
they can't repeat a joke.
They can't repeat a joke. Right.
Right.
They're stuck doing this.
It's gotta be all new material.
Always doing something
new. When you get to
new.
Special levels. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you should be writing new every day.
And one of the executives from Netflix came forward and said, yeah, I fucked up. We fucked up. We should have not allowed this to go forward. And we can now see that it's transphobic.
I guess to me, it's like Dave Chappelle very famously puts himself as a ethical or as a in a place of authority because he walked away from his lucrative television series. He said he left, you know,
sure,
millions of dollars on the table.
Sure.
Because he felt that the wrong people were laughing at the jokes.
Right.
For the wrong reasons.
Right.
And now he's like touring with this right wing pundit, Joe Rogan, and, you know, who's like a Trumper, who's like the same. He's the kind of person that was laughing at his jokes for the wrong reasons.
Of course.
And so to me, I'm like, is he just like he made so much money and that's the real reason he walked away from the show because it was an inconvenience?
It's tricky because it's like you got to look at it from a performer's perspective and also how big Dave Chappelle is. The entire special was a lot of like, I'm the GOAT. I'm the best. I think he might have said that at least like five times to explain whatever.
And when you have to say you're the GOAT, you're not the GOAT.
Yeah. And it's like I personally loved Dave Chappelle till about 2016, 2017. It started to get a little weird. And this special in particular was, I can see why people are in such an uproar. I also empathize a little bit because as a performer, sometimes you say shit and it's stupid and you don't even know it because you have to keep going. I didn't like his comment about how people who aren't performing right now because of COVID are cowards. Are you out of your mind? Like that's some right wing shit. Where it's like, no, some people just want to have the patience to wait to go back out before it's safe. And I've called them cowards. It's like taking a stance can be hard sometimes. But he also offers a space to where he can say something that you disagree with and he can still treat you with love. And that's what's important. I mean, that's super important. The fact that he is reaching out is very important. He can learn from it. He can offer.
Yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, cynically, you know, there's a lot of money to be made on multiple places by dividing and conquering communities. And there's always been this, you know, when trans people talk about the rest of the LGBT scene, the community or politics, leaving them behind, you know, there's another thing about it is that there's a lot of elitism. There's a lot of squareness. There's a lot of classism. Like I was just reflecting on this, the Victory Fund, which is one of the biggest nonprofit advocacy groups that raises, you know, millions of dollars every year, famously to elect LGBT politicians, gave $97,000, according to their own figures, to Kristen Sinema to become, you know, Arizona's bisexual senator. Yeah.
And jeez. I don't know if you could call it a nonprofit.
Or, like, you know, whatever, a political organization.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. That kind of thing. Well, you know, they've come under criticism in the past because they have endorsed the LGBT candidate over somebody who would be a straight candidate who would be more progressive, like in primaries. So, you know, Democrats, they've gone for just the queer one who might even be more conservative.
And I don't see any outrage by these people who are pissed off at Dave Chappelle. Kristen Sinema is way more toxic, way more harmful than Dave Chappelle is.
No, of course.
And she's like stopping us from like recovering or living, you know. I mean, talk about harmful, you know.
Yeah, it's just it's so fucking tricky, because it's just some I'm always coming from a place of listening in this regard, and it's like I have so many trans friends right now that are very, very hurt by what they saw, and while I was watching it, I was like, this is just not enjoyable. But I can't imagine watching something and feeling threatened or harmed, or what kind of situation are we in as a country to where someone just talking on stage can make someone feel like they are going to be harmed, which is another topic altogether.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that we're saying that is like in the green room of Chicago's comedy clubs, that it's a toxic environment for LGBT people. And I've been in those rooms that I've certainly, you know, they were mostly half of them were filled with queer people.
Well, those were the nights.
But those are the shows we were and participating in.
But, you know, when we first started doing this podcast way back in 2005, it was hard to find an LGBT out stand-up comedian, like, locally. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult. It wasn't until, like, was 2000, like, even 2 years later that we started having some on. And then we saw more and more people coming out of the closet. And, you know, it's just like, it seems like every comedian we know now is gay.
Well, right, and I think, you know, the biggest problem that doesn't get discussed is alcoholism and cocaine use. I mean, it even makes people laugh, but it is like, you know, if you have a drinking or drug problem, being a stand-up comedy is not the place for you.
No.
Well,
no.
You know, or it could be just the right place. You never know, right?
You're like, hey, wait a second.
Wait a second.
Let's not go crazy here.
I'll deal with my demons on the stage.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a lot of people do. A lot of people do deal with their demons on stage.
You know, a lot of comedians won't even get up there without at least a couple drinks in them.
I usually don't, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I like having at least a whiskey on the rocks, at least one before I go up. It's it just creates an environment to where I feel on the same page as the audience. They're drinking. Why shouldn't I be? Why should I be more sober to manipulate them? It's fucked up.
That's a good point. Yeah. It is sort of like when you're hooking up with somebody who's like been having drinks all night long and you're like just got off work and you're like, you know,
right? No, I'm never like
the energy level. I'm never belligerent.
I just have a drink, you know, just enough to.
Have you ever seen a comedian get up there and just be wasted and get sloppy?
Absolutely.
And stupid?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen people puke on stage
during their set.
Absolutely.
Oh, Jesus. It's Christ.
Disgusting, man.
Oh, it's, man.
Yeah.
What did they throw up?
I mean, just vile, just water, essentially. It's just like, I mean, my buddy was telling me one time before he did a set, he was so nervous, he would puke right before his open mics every time.
Oh,
he had a habit of just puking right before he went on stage when he first started.
You know, there's people with stage fright that's what they do every time. They're just like, I'm always like, I'm nervous and butterflies and just throw up and I feel better.
Stage fright is so funny because it's so telling, you know,
yeah.
Like where people are at. Yeah, because every human experiences stage fright. It's just nerves.
Mm.
And everyone people will say they don't get stage fright anymore. They don't get nervous or full of shit. You either get nervous right beforehand, during, or after. It just lessens. You just don't notice it as much.
Well, as Tyra Banks screams at the fashion models on America's Next Top Model, is like, we are rooting for you.
Yeah, exactly.
But you sometimes don't feel it from the audience.
No.
And you feel like the audience is there just like, well, this.
Well, it's not their fucking job to be there for you. It's their job. You know, you're serving them. And so if they're not laughing, you're doing something wrong.
What do you think? Is there anything that can change to create a more welcoming environment for LGBT people in Chicago's comedy scene?
Serious ego counseling. Yeah. Serious ego counseling.
What does that look like?
That looks like people understanding that, one, in stand-up, we have to relook at the philosophy of stand-up as performers overall. A lot of people get in because they're trying to get be seen, be famous. That's so toxic. And it's so devastating to the overall health of the community, because then you're in it for self-gain rather than serving your audience to the fullest extent, which means offering the fullest amount of voices. And that means I'm providing a space to hear different perspectives and share the same amount of circumstances in terms of stage time and the stage itself.
That's a really beautiful way of putting it.
It really relies on the comics reevaluating their own ethics.
But at the same time, you know, it's like, I just have a hard time seeing the Andrew Dice Clays or the, you know, of today's comedy scene being persuaded or influenced to change their behavior. And so one advice that I heard other comedians say is like, listen, if you're queer and you're a comedian and you have other queer comedian friends, get together and put on your own shows, because, you know, those are the kind of shows that everybody wants to see because they're going to be more welcoming in the first place. And then it's like people are going to want to participate in that.
Yeah, of course. And that's always, I agree in the notion that everyone should be creating their own art. But I also think that there's certain leadership roles, not just in stand-up, but in theater as well, that need to be reevaluated. You know, more people that are black should be directors in theater and should be booking clubs. More people in the LGBTQ community should be involved in the decision making and be at the table. It's when they're in their higher roles, then the real change will start to happen.
So what you're saying is that we should put Matt Brown in charge of everything?
Not everything.
Oh, shit.
Not everything, but definitely a solid voice that is either equal or...
Well, Matt gets into a lot of trouble because he says he's too conservative for the liberals and too liberal for the conservatives. And he's like, he on this podcast said about Dave Chappelle's, like, you know, in defense of Dave Chappelle, that, you know, none of these words are going to impact anybody in the least.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if anyone can be certain of that. I really don't, because I honestly, in today's society, misinformation and opinions are so received and so taken seriously that I can't say that that's a certain stance that I would side with. Not that he couldn't be right.
Matt, you're wrong. You're listening. You're wrong.
It's, you know, it's confirmation bias, I think, for the most part. These people already have ideas. And then when I hear somebody like Dave Chappelle, you know, espouse these ideas, they said, see, I was right.
Sure. And Dave, that is entirely, you know? Exactly.
And you know, the problem is when you start to dehumanize somebody, you see them as less as human, and then it's easier to victimize them. And we do know that, you know, black trans women are murdered. I mean, I can't tell. I think we're probably up to at least 30 trans people murdered this year.
Yep.
In the United States alone. And so it's, you know, there's violence against women.
Right.
Disproportionate. There's violence against trans women. At a very high rate. So it's hard and it's difficult to say. And that's why they're very alarmed when a comedian that gets this kind of platform is able to espouse these kinds of things. Because, you know, he could have spent that last 20 minutes, you know, talking about anything else.
Any fucking thing else.
Intersectionality. You know? I do appreciate the fact that he had dedicated his last special most of the time to LGBT topics.
Sure. There's definitely some sides.
Other people are not doing that.
No.
And, you know, like the queer comedians aren't talking about it. The progressive ones don't talk about these things. So, you know, it's unfortunate that a conservative voice is saying this. But I appreciate that they're bringing up the topic so we can all talk about it.
And if we had equal footing.
Yeah.
Then this would be fair game.
Yeah.
If we could have a trans comic go on and do the same shit and have just as much of, you know, a backlash and controversy, then it would be okay. We can have a real full discussion right now.
Hey, can we have a talk about this? Where's the controversy? Is it here? Is it there?
Do you know if Steve ever saw your video?
I tagged him in. I don't think so. But you know, he's probably got better things to do. He's probably doing a lot of coke right now in college.
And sex with Playboy models. So do you know what an incel is?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Incels are basically, you've been called an incel?
Of course I've been called an incel.
Why would you call an incel?
Your mom?
No. My dad. I'm joking. I'm joking. No, it's just, I can relate to, I've had friends that are incels.
So an incel is a man who blames the fact that he's not getting laid on women and not himself.
Involuntary celibate.
Yeah, it's a slang for involuntarily celibate. And they tend to be, they are very right-wing conservative, racist people.
Right.
And so, you know, the new, and we're always like following that because I think it's hilarious. There was a trend called mewing, which is not like meowing like a cat. which I think would be funny if there were all these straight guys are like, meow, meow.
Mewling.
Mewing is when you press the tongue on the top of your throat to look like you have a stronger jawline. And so it was the natural facelift in the 80s that everybody was doing. Now it's called mewing.
Basically, it builds up like the muscles along your cheeks or along your jawline. So you have like a more square jaw. So you appear more masculine. Looking.
Okay.
You know, that TikTok.
Some people have some, you know, profound transformations with their face doing it.
Sure.
Well, let's not go crazy. And then, you know, the TikTok, like smile, then frown and keep your eyes open. That's your model face. You know, this is stupid shit like that.
Yeah.
So the new one that's being spread around, and these are, you know, fitness, bodybuilding, right winger people too. It's called not mansplaining, but man spreading.
right.
Which is like Cheetah Rivera in spreading your legs open like a Bob Fosse model to show that you're the alpha male, the man in the room. And I'm like, isn't spreading your legs, isn't that like when, you know, to receive a dick, not to put a dick? I mean, am I getting this wrong?
No, I mean, the only time I've ever been told to spread them is if I'm being searched or being fucked. That's it.
Yeah. So Alexandra Billings made a hilarious video on her Instagram, which you definitely should check out.
And people have been complaining about man spreading, especially like riding
the train.
Man spreading, yeah. You know, riding the train, your legs are wide, so you're taking up more space. That kind of thing. And people are like, guys are like, well, I have to, because my dick's so big, I can't close my legs or something. Like,
I mean,
like
it is a problem we run into, you know?
You know, like, you can shift them around.
No, it's bullshit.
You know, it's bullshit. Total bullshit.
Yeah.
It's really bad for your back.
Oh, yeah. No, it's just bad for everyone.
Just that posture. Like, actually, let me see it. Let me do it right now. Actually, it's not bad, actually. Everybody should be man spread.
I mean, I'm spread right now, but like I'm 3 feet away from him.
I think man spreading is it's almost symbolic because it's like men taking up room, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like what you're talking about, that guy literally giving instructions about how to take up more space.
Well, if you're 300 pounds, regardless of your gender, you're going to take up more room.
Oh, totally. But I mean, if you're
a bigger guy, is going to take up more room.
Right. If you're a small guy and you want to, like, you know, make a point to be the big man in the room, you spread your legs. That's the whole, which is hilarious because you're like revealing the most vulnerable part of your body.
Like mountain gorillas, like a young mountain gorilla, to show that they're submissive to the big male, will lay down and spread their legs and show them their penis. Be like, so because like you say, it's vulnerable. Yes, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
If he doesn't like it, you just go off and you punch it.
No, and that's what I think. I don't know. I just feel like if people kick someone who's manspreading, they would never do that shit again.
No, I think, you know, one weird thing that used to be really common and on, especially body language on talk shows like The Tonight Show in the 80s was men, I'm going to show it to you, is crossing their legs like this.
Oh, yeah, I still see that. Yeah, that's so true.
Like the lady leg
cross. I've seen a lot of people do that. George Clooney in particular.
And when you bring your ankle closer to your hip, I'm sitting, if you guys can follow this at home, sit down, bring your right ankle over your knee, and then you stretch forward. Mm-hmm. It's a yoga position. It's a, what do we call, office yoga?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really, really good for your back.
When I was younger, I used to like often like sit like in class and I'd cross my legs or whatever like that thing. But I realized I don't do it now.
Yeah,
it's because my legs are much fatter.
They're thicker.
You know, there's more muscle there.
Right.
But there's also muscle. a little more blubber there as well. And so it's harder to do. And then that's also like squeezing the junk in there. So maybe. I'm just manspreading more now.
Real men also have curves.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm the alpha and the omega and everything in between.
Yeah, well, it is kind of weird to do like the alpha male. That argument was pretty funny. She was talking about,
that's a Nicki Minaj song.
Yeah.
Saying she's the alpha and the omega and everything in between. So all these incel guys are like quoting Nicki Minaj.
Which is, it's pretty ironic.
Which is, you know, incels, now you sound like a RuPaul's Drag Race contestant.
Yeah. Incels are
all boil down the intersectionality between involuntarily celibates, right wing conservatives, bodybuilders, share drag queens is more common than you think.
There's so many commonalities. People just don't see them.
And the common thread is that people, it's like, it's a dog behind a fence barking. to make themselves feel better that they're behind that fence.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I'm the badass.
I think incels are particularly funny, though, because they kind of like cause the problem themselves. Like, they're like, I'm not getting laid. And then they just get mad at everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is just hilarious.
You know, it's like, maybe try being a decent human being.
Just take a shower, dude. Like, that's it. Like, that's all they're saying. Get a haircut. You know, read a book, maybe. I don't know.
It's well, what's so a good way to get, like, if you see a fine lady at a club, what's your, like, strategy to win her affection?
I ignore the shit out of her.
Really?
Yeah. I just go, if I, like, I mean, one, I'm
so
I'm
she, usually, that's why she thinks you're gay. Or you're like, oh my God, you're so pretty.
How does ignoring her get her attention?
Well, you walk in, you know, like I think most people won't admit to this, but I'll go ahead and admit to this. When someone walks in the room, they automatically analyze it and they go, who would I fuck? Or who would fuck me?
Oh, and, I'm all the time.
Right. And if you, you know, like you're at a bar in particular, night out, and you see someone, you just kind of go in that general area. You feel the vibe. If they're talking to their friend, having a good time, there might be an open, safe way to like chime in. But you want to have them notice you first. You come out of nowhere. That's dumb. That's not good strategy. You're not hunting. You know, it's mutual.
Because women are gatherers. Like, they're not hunters. They're gonna be like, who's what?
Well, no, just not prey.
What dicks are laying around here? I should put in my basket tonight.
Yeah, and incels kind of look at it like prey a little bit, and that's not the fucking thing. You want people to come to you. You want to just be approachable.
Well, like if I find somebody that's really of a guy that's hot at the gym, I go, hey, can you use? I use my demon voice. Hey man, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey,
the demon voice.
What are you doing tonight? Same thing we do every night. Hey. Same, suck and fuck each other. And so I go up to him and I said, "Hey, hi, how are you doing?"
Right.
And no, I said, "Can you spot me for just a minute and stuff? You know?"
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
And so you know,
that's some you know, and you're kind of you're. More,
asking for help.
You might be subconsciously manipulative in that sense because
I'm not subconsciously nothing.
Okay, well then you are for sure taking a manipulative tactic because as far as social psychology goes, having people do favors for you wins them over 100% of the time.
I know it's
then
so
crazy. They have to justify why they're doing the fucking favor. And they're like, oh, he's nice, or, you know, he did this one thing.
He's not.
Time.
So he's not hitting on me.
To do favors
yeah, don't
for you.
Do favors for them. That's some bullshit. That won't work.
They walk all over you.
Yeah, they walk all over you to take advantage. You'll get nowhere. You get someone to do a favor for you, got him. I don't act on this information. I just know about it.
Right? Wow, you have evil.
That's
there.
Good to know.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So the more, I mean, part of it is, you know, love is a verb, right? It's about giving. And sharing and
yeah, well, don't do it in relationships ever. Yeah. But I mean, as far as like, I don't know, just if you're trying to like get in the door, I feel like that's what they taught in social psychology. That's just
so
what I know.
The last girl you were with, how did you win her over, like in a non-toxic male kind of way? Or maybe you were like, oh, lady, I'm taking you home. She's like, oh, he's so strong and assertive. I love this alpha male.
No, it was, God, yeah. I'm in a relationship right now.
How did you win her over?
You know, I've known her for a bit and I waited that out. Like,
you waited for her to notice you.
Yeah. And I was even in other relationships. And I, you know, I didn't like her at the time. I loved the girls I was with. But I definitely, before I was with them, saw her at a bar and was just like in awe. And so one time she posted something on her Instagram or actually she might have reached out to me. One of us slid into the DMs, which we would do often. And
slid into DMs is having private conversations.
Yeah, it's like someone posts something and then you have the need to message them about their post.
Did she ask you for a dick pic?
No, she.
Because gay guys do that all the time.
She was the opposite. Yeah. She was like, I invited her to a show to go out to dinner after, which I never do. I don't ever invite people fucking shows. But she came and she brought her friends. And then afterwards we went to a bar, and while we were leaving, she was like, "This is platonic. It's just platonic." And I was just like, "Yeah, fucking right. This is not platonic. You are absolutely."
Why was she saying that?
Because she was into me. She was lying. She was for sure lying, and you could feel that. And
so she was trying to talk herself out of her feelings.
Yeah, of course. Of course she was.
And why was she feeling threatened by having feelings for you?
Because I'm a very charismatic, beautiful man.
You're like Blue's Clues without the nerd.
Right.
So did she fess up that she was in love with you that first night? Or
No. We.
So you had more friendly dates?
We had one more date, and then I think one more after that, and then we finally were like, okay, this is cool. But she was definitely pushing away and was like, no, this is not anything.
I'm sure she had some reservations about dating a comedian, huh?
Everyone should.
Yeah, right? That's absolutely a healthy dose of...
Everyone should.
Is she a comedian?
She's done some comedy in the past. She's a writer right now. So I mean, it's nice to have that little bit of separation. She's not out as much, but she does do stand up from time to time. She's very funny.
But is she like, you know, like, hey, I got a joke for you. No, listen.
I mean, no, sometimes she just says shit.
Is your girlfriend an alcoholic?
Not even close.
Is what Foster's asking.
Danny, listen, I got a joke for you. No, listen. You gotta do this. No,
she just says shit and it's hilarious. And so it's like,
yeah, I married the funniest person in the room.
Oh, I get so mad when like she'll say something and I'm like, God damn it. That is so funny.
Just steal it. Right.
I mean, sometimes it's like I want to, but I don't really.
Well, if she you're in a relationship, it's fair. I think, you know, fair game to use.
Like Foster uses my butt picture when he's hunting guys.
Well, they want to see that. People want to see my ass. And I don't think I have as good of an ass as Mark does. So I just send them. And people say that we look alike. So I'm like, why not send them Mark's ass? And they're like, that's a beautiful ass. I was like, yep.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Somebody said to me the other day, is like, you're such an attractive, handsome man. And I said, I agree. You have excellent taste.
That's hilarious.
Dan, it's such a pleasure chatting with you and meeting you. I absolutely love your comedy. You're a breath of fresh air.
Thanks.
What a great way to start a 10 show countdown.
I know. I'm so excited for you both. Thank you.
I appreciate
no
it.
Scrubs.
Yeah. No scrubs.
What is a scrub? Again,
TLC. A guy who thinks he's fine. Yeah. And he sits in the car window hollering at girls of his best friend's ride.
Yes.
Right?
So he's
right.
A wingman.
Yeah.
But it's a sports term, meaning like they're a disposable player until the high performers get in.
They're not varsity players, or they're not first string players.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or first or second string, I think.
I don't know anything about the sports stuff. Okay. I just know it's a guy who hollers.
Foster asked me, he's like, who do you want in our top 10, you know, people for the podcast? You know, are they not top 10? The last 10 shows.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't care, but No Scrubs. And he's just like, what's that? And I'm like, you don't know the song, No Scrubs?
TLC. Yeah.
TLC is just like, no. I'm like, where were you when that song came out? It was huge.
It was great.
And it's referenced all the time in pop culture.
Like I went to this to this brunch for like the square part of my family's, you know, getting my nephew and his girlfriend getting married, right? And we went to the thing, and the squarest, you know, whitest person in my family, I said, No Scrubs. And she's like, and she just starts singing TLC song to me. And I'm like, I'm now the squarest person in my family.
You're the scrub.
I have. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the scrub.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess we can't be in our shows anymore. people can follow Dan Cass on Instagram. Dynamite?
No, it's a dank.
That's the wrong one.
It's dank Cass. It's dank ass.
Oh, dank. Like stank ass.
It's like dank ass. Like I got like dank ass.
D-A-N-K-K-S-S.
Yeah.
Now, I want you to look at... Dynamite's Instagram.
I would love to.
This is you in an alternate.
This guy.
Alternate universe if you were gay. He's from Australia.
Oh, wow. He's got some abs.
He's got abs. Okay. He's got a girlfriend and he drinks wine.
Well, this, I feel like you should follow this guy.
Follow Dynamite. You can follow both.
Dan Cass, D-A-N-K-K-S-A-S-S.
Yeah.
Because Dan with a K goes nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the
and you have a website, dan-cast.com.
Yeah, I do. It's just got up. That's got some of my stand up on it and some sketches. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on there.
And it's your background as a improv dance.
Yeah, person. Making fun of theater kids right there.
It is weird.
Lots like, to make fun of there, huh?
Those books that we had when we were in high school or elementary school about acting or music, and everyone's like, really happy.
Right.
And you're like, I hate those kids.
I can't stand them. New school theater kids.
Well, congratulations on everything. Congratulations on your viral video.
I don't know if you could say that anymore. We're in a post-Glee world now.
The Glee.
I love musical theater kids, but please sometimes just shut the fuck up.
They're very excited.
They are, and they're very passionate, and sometimes just very a little too certain.
And the women sure do like to cock block the gay boys.
If I had a nickel for every hunk that was gay hunk, that the girlfriend like, pay attention to me. Hey, no. Pay attention to me.
You're not going home with him.
No, you're not. Listen.
That was my favorite part. That was my favorite part of musical.
You're going to catch an STD from Fausto. I'm like, shut up. You weren't very good in
I'll return him in good shape. Don't worry.
Dan, thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.